Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Please make sure your seatbelt is securely fastened, your tray table is in an upright and locked position, and that you are ready to get weird and think different. Please prepare for takeoff. Today is Thursday. It is February 24th. We are back with another episode of Destination Different. I'm tracking to hit an interview a week, every week, for the entirety of 2022. Made it my goal. 52 interviews, 52 weeks. That's the plan. We're sticking to it. I have so many interviews in the can. It's crazy. I've never been this far ahead in my life. I think I'm a month ahead, maybe more, 4, 5, 6 lined up. I've never felt this feeling. Usually I'm chasing it one week after the next, just trying to get by, but we got some in the bank. We're rolling. We got a good routine here going. So I'm trying to keep that rolling for the entirety of 2022. My other thing before I get into this week's guest, reminder, love letters. It's in the description. It's 280 characters. You can help me win. You can help the Destination Different podcast win up to $5,000. $5,000. And more importantly, the distinction of greatest podcast on earth for small up-and-coming podcasters. So I ask that you take 2 seconds, 280 characters, write me a love letter, tell Podcash why you think Destination Different deserves to win the cash. That's all I ask. All right. As for this week's guest, we have not one, but two guests on this week's show. Today we have Dan Brett and Bobby Harrington, who are the co-founders of Drifter. If you haven't heard of Drifter, you're going to hear of Drifter. Drifter is the perfect business for the future of work. So Dan and Bobby, during pandemic started, they seen some of their friends working from Florida, working from Colorado, working from South Carolina, working from all over the country. They said, you know what? We want to do that too. So they started bopping around, renting an Airbnb here, a VRBO there, and started to dabble in this remote lifestyle. As they did that, they started liking it more and more, and they realized, yeah, this is great, but some of these Airbnbs aren't necessarily set up to work in. They're more so set up to live in. And so with Drifter, what they've done is create a model where they are snagging properties all over the country in key areas that you'd want to visit, things close to nature like Boulder, Colorado, up-and-coming cities like Austin, houses in the mountains like Killington. And what they're doing is they're tricking them out so that they have monitors, great Wi-Fi, call rooms, etc. But they also have bedrooms and bathrooms and shared space. And so they're creating this hybrid work-life model where they're building these properties all over the country. And so the model of Drifter is fascinating. And I think as we move to a more remote work society, you're just going to see more and more people working remote, working 2 months here, a month there. And Dan and Bobby are building the perfect business to meet that need. So I won't get too much into their story. They explain it a whole hell of a lot better than I do, but I am incredibly excited to introduce you to Drifter on this week's episode of Destination Different. I hope you enjoy.
During the event, he decided that it was a good idea to break open a Jewel Pod container and drink the concentrated liquid that was in one of those Jewel Pod containers, which, if you don't know, that's like concentrated nicotine. So the guy had like a terrible reaction. I mean, he's out of his mind. We get some EMTs in there. He's on the second floor of the mods. They have to extract him, bring him down, get him in the ambulance, get him to the hospital. And we were talking with like the doctor when we got him there. And he was like, yeah, I mean, it's a good thing that A, those guys called when they did, and B, you guys got there when you did, because the kid shows up probably 10 or 15 minutes later and he may not have made it because he had severe like nicotine poisoning and probably would have died. So it was a combination of like, you know, doing pretty foolish things when you're drunk and young, but also, you know, ended up being a better situation than it could have been.
The reason I asked, you guys have both had these kind of crazy, crazy job experiences. I'm curious if you've always now, as you've sort of moved into this entrepreneurial, you know, startup space, have you always kind of had an interest in starting your own business, or was this something that was more birthed from the idea and you're like, we have to do this? Or did you kind of have this entrepreneurial act and knack as you grew up?
I think, Bobby, we were like kicking around ideas probably like our first year out of college. Bobby and I would always text each other because we kind of knew that we were both interested in, like, you know, the sort of the startup world, and kind of seeing what was going on with like other BC companies and things like that at the time. So like we were kicking around some ideas. We had a couple of like MVPs early on of just like me, you know, building a site, coming up like with an idea, Bobby going out and, you know, selling it and doing some of the business development side of that. So I think out of college we were doing it, but in college, I personally, I wasn't really involved in the entrepreneurship community. It kind of sprung sort of post-grad, but I think Bobby, your experience is a little different with some of the classes you took, right?
Yeah. So I kind of always grew up like mowing lawns and like coaching tennis, like that sort of thing, like looking for extra cash, and like fell in love with that aspect of like, you know, how much work you put in is, you know, kind of the reward you see. Always kind of knew I wanted to like take a shot. And yeah, as Danny said, like, you know, I think we both wanted to work for a couple of years, get some money, save some money. Was able to take some great classes at BC, took like entrepreneurial management with Doug Shaw. That was really eye opening. And then, yeah, we kind of like kicked around these ideas. And then summer of 2020, we decided to apply to that BC Summer Accelerator and got into that.
Got it. And you had an idea that was totally separate from what you guys are currently doing with Drifter. So tell me a little bit about that. And from my understanding, it was, you know, kind of meal kits for local businesses. But how did that idea come to be? And why was that the choice at that time?
I think when we started out, it was, we had been kind of seeing sort of the rise and the popularity of like meal kits. Like, you know, you saw like the HelloFreshes of the world, the Blue Aprons, kind of those big ones where all of that stuff was vertically integrated. It was run by one company and it wasn't necessarily like the most fresh food. And so when the pandemic hit, right, we knew all these restaurants were looking for sort of like creative ways to make cash besides like takeout. And one of those concepts was like, you know, maybe if you make a meal kit, these are really popular with a lot of folks our age and others who, you know, maybe want like sort of a healthy, somewhat homemade meal, but don't want to like prep the ingredients or what have you. So we thought it'd be kind of an interesting idea to create not only like an aggregator service that would show you, you know, the meal kits that were available from local restaurants in your area, but also help with sort of the logistics, coordination, and actual distribution of those. So handling basically kind of like what we were trying to be was like an Uber Eats, but specifically for meal kits. And so, you know, really like the food space, but it's a tough space to be in, especially during the pandemic, right? Where like it's chaos everywhere. You know, these restaurants are holding by a thread. They don't really want to adopt new technology or talk to new folks, right? Because they're just trying to survive and, you know, hold on to as many customers as they can. And so that's, I think, what ultimately kind of pushed us in a direction to get out of that space. It's just a tough business to be in. And I think with the pandemic, it was chaotic, but it was really, really good experience for like 3, 4, 5 months of working in that food space, getting to know these local businesses and, you know, trying to drive some traffic to them on a daily basis. That made me feel good too, is which, like, you know, at the end of the day, what we were trying to do is help some of the restaurants especially in our local community in Boston at the time.
And so was the idea there that, I just want to make sure I'm understanding this, that it was like, all right, you could go to Joe's Kitchen down the block and say, hey, we want to buy pasta and sauce and meatballs, and it's sort of like already ready to go. And you sort of, you know, are then the delivery partner that brings it to somebody's house and it's ready to eat.
Yeah. Kind of similar to that, like HelloFresh or Blue Apron, where it's like part of that process. It's not like just raw ingredients, I guess, like part of that process is like automated for the consumer. So like maybe some things are like cut up or it's like prepackaged and it just has like very simple instructions of like, you know, this is how you make that dish that you love at our restaurant. Like, this is exactly how you make it at home.
Got it. And were you guys, was it a, you saw a need and an opportunity and that's why you drove into it? Or did you have a specific passion for the food industry and want to get out in that way? Like what sort of drove that initial business idea?
I think it was a combination of both. I very much enjoy cooking, but I think what we came to learn, right, is, you know, there's, let's say, like the passion that someone like I have for cooking, where like I really enjoy it. I like to do it casually. And then there's folks that take it to a whole entire, you know, different level, right? The food influencers and the food bloggers and folks whose life really is, and the restaurateurs, of course, whose life is food. And so I think that also is what ultimately forced us to, or not forced us to pivot, I should say, is what influenced our decision to pivot completely is, you know, it was one of those things where we saw an opportunity, we saw a need, and we liked what we were doing, but I don't necessarily know if the passion was there as much versus what we're now doing with Drifter. I mean, both Bobby and I, we were already doing this independently. It's something that we love to do. I love the aspect of traveling and working from remotely from different locations. So I think the passion was more aligned with that idea. And that's ultimately what forced us to, influence our decision to pivot out of Marketplace.
Yeah, it makes sense. Was there a moment where you guys, you know, looked at each other and were like, we gotta make a switch here. Something's not working. Or like, how did that conversation go to actually like cut it off? Cause I'm always interested with people that have like started something and then they're like, you know what, this isn't working. I'm going to get on to something else that I think, you know, has a better shot. Like how did that decision-making process go?
Yeah, we were initially doing like okay on revenue, not great. Like we're seeing like some like good initial traction that was like convincing. And then kind of when we started going out and pitching VCs, or, you know, we got a lot of responses like, hey, you know, like we like you guys, like we like the progress we've made. Like we, you know, we're not sure if we want to get into the food space. So that was definitely an aspect of it. Yeah, that was a piece of it. And then as Danny was saying, like with Drifter, it's like, it's something we were already doing. We were actually doing this as we were doing Marketplace. So we're kind of out there and we're like, how cool would this be if like this just became our company?
Mm-hmm. I think the other thing we saw with Marketplace too was for a business or startup, I think, to succeed, it has to have a level of stickiness and potentially leverage as well. And what I mean by that is like, we weren't necessarily a crucial feature of, let's say, those restaurants or whatever else that want to develop a meal kit, right? I mean, because it's already their recipes, it's already their ingredients and their foods. And there's certainly much larger and, you know, more sophisticated food delivery partners out there. So what it came down to was like, well, do these restaurants, A, really want our help to develop, let's say, a meal kit menu, or can they do that on their own? And likely they probably can do it, you know, better than we can on their own, right? Because they're all trained in that and they know their recipes. And B, can we compete with the, you know, Uber Eats, DoorDash and those folks on a smaller scale? And I think the answer to both those questions was no. And once we came to that realization, it was like, okay, we can either keep, you know, forging ahead with this or we can try something different.
Yeah. From inception of that idea to shutting it down, how much time was put into Marketplace when you got it going?
Oh, it was quick. We were working on it part-time for a little. And then from the accelerator to shutting it down, what'd you say? 4 months, probably, Danny? Yeah, I think
four months. Yeah, four.
We had like
4 or 5 months.
Strict sales goals that we were trying to meet every week and, you know, kind of like reevaluating like the business prop and really looking at it to see if it'd be like a viable thing. So I'd say probably 4 months.
Okay. And as you shut that down, were you immediately like, already kind of working on Drifter? Was that something that was happening in the background, or was it like clean slate? We got to figure out something else new to do because we don't have a business anymore.
So I know Bobby's going to want to talk about this. So this is in hindsight, it's a great story. So at the time, right, like we had been full time for like 5 months, you know, both living in Boston, basically broke. And so we needed a way to make some cash. And it was like, I want to say early November, whatever it was. And we're talking with one of our mentors through the accelerator program. Actually, funny enough, it's Justin Robinson, who's one of the co-founders of Drizzly, who's a brilliant guy. He's got, you know, great entrepreneurial instincts. And he was like, you know, what I've always never understood is with Christmas trees, why do you always have to go to a Christmas tree lot to go pick those up? Why can't, you know, you guys have already been doing delivery stuff. Why can't you just get a Christmas tree delivered to you and set up in your home? Like, I hate going to a Christmas tree lot and picking it up and doing that. And so I'm going to let Bobby explain this because he had all the kind of right marketing ideas here. But we launched for like 1 month only just to make some money, what we called Santa Trees. Bobby, you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So exactly what Danny was saying. We're basically out of money looking for something to bridge the gap because we didn't want to give up the startup dream. So we basically just started cold emailing, cold calling any reporter in Boston and kind of just saying like, hey, we're two BC grads. We're going out. We're going to start delivering Christmas trees in full Santa suits. And kind of just like threw that out there to see if anyone pick it up. Someone from Mass Live picked it up. We got like a decent amount of orders from that. And then the next question was like, okay, where do we actually get these Christmas trees? We have all these Christmas tree orders. We have no Christmas trees. So we figured out a way to source some Christmas trees, got a decent amount, ordered our Santa suits, and then continued just calling press and reaching out to press. And eventually, towards the end, someone from the Wall Street Journal and a couple Boston local news stations picked it up. And when that hit, it just went nuts. And made enough money to kind of bridge that gap to Drifter.
That's unbelievable. So like how many, I mean, I have so many questions about this. How many trees did you secure? You out in the forest, just like hacking down pine trees for Christmas? Like what was the volume like? And are the two of you literally just like shoving these in the back of your car? Like what was the delivery mechanism looking like?
It was not the most sophisticated delivery mechanism, let me tell you. So our idea, same thing with like kind of the emphasis on like, you know, we wanted to, again, stay within our community, what we could. So we were like, we're not going to go and get these trees from like Home Depot, whatever it is, right? We want to do this where it's like, it's either a local farm that has these trees that we can purchase them, from there, or like a local distributor. And we ended up doing kind of a combination of those both, depending on, how many trees they had available, because, you know, they're flying off shelves. What helped us as well is, again, with the pandemic, folks being super cautious about going out, they didn't want to go to a lot with a lot of people and get it. So that helped as well. So we, every day, you know, literally, I think we'd wake up at like, I don't know, like 7 a.m., you know, drive up to this Christmas tree distributor and some farms in New Hampshire, go pick up, like, you know, I had a Subaru, Bobby had a Toyota Corolla, and we're driving back with like six Christmas trees strapped to the top of our cars, which was like so not good going down Storrow Drive with like six Christmas trees, you know, hanging out the windows and tied to the top. But we would go all around Boston, basically, and the suburbs, in our Santa suits, and we would go and actually like set up the Christmas trees in the stands. And people loved it. Like little kids, like people would, parents would order it so their little kids could like see Santa setting up the Christmas trees. Some of the reporters got in on the fun. So we did one with, I think it was like a local CBS station where the reporter himself was like dressed up in the Santa suit. And so he was helping us deliver trees for a day. It was a blast, but it was like 12 hours a day of just like driving to different locations, setting up, you know, Christmas trees and going on to the next one, basically. But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'd pick these up and we had nowhere to store them because we, you know, obviously didn't have time to get a lot. So we'd put a ton of these trees in Danny's parking garage and then have them all set up for the next day, go out, deliver them, go back up to New Hampshire, get a bunch more trees, bring them back. It's quite a time.
That's amazing. How much money did you make on that in the span of a month? You probably did pretty well for yourself, I have to imagine.
We did. I want to say we did like over 10 grand. I think we did like between 10 and 15 grand, I want to say.
I love that. And so that helped, that helped carry you for a couple months. You now have, you know, a couple 10 grand or whatever in your pocket. Were you then sort of started working on Drifter and that's when it kind of picked up in that world? Or were you still in like the ideation phase of like, all right, we're going to throw this out. We're going to throw this out. Or was it always going to, was it always leaning towards this Drifter idea?
No, we'd been percolating on like kind of that idea for a bit. The tough thing with what we wanted to do, right, was to test this out. We actually had to get a property. And for the property, we needed to like raise a little bit of capital so we can go out and say, hey, we actually already have, you know, X number of dollars set aside to, we didn't want to buy our first property. We wanted to lease it just to test out the idea, right? See, is this concept of like making a remote friendly, you know, home, like, is that something that's going to be very attractive and actually, drive people to that? And so part of that was like choosing the location and then going out and fundraising. So that was, So we fundraised. So I think we finished Santa Trees, basically right after Christmas. We also offered like removal services. So we were doing that until like the second week of January, basically. Like we'd go and pick up your tree and like dispose of it. So after that, we started putting like our deck together. And we knew some folks from the SSC. We knew there was a local angel group in Boston. It's called 380 Cap. That's composed of some BC alumni. And then we had a good connection with Justin Robinson, who I think this was right before Drizzly's exit to Uber. And so we pitched them on the idea, totally, totally unproven. The only track record that we really had was the revenue we'd done with Marketplace and then also what we'd done with Santa Trees, which they got a kick out of. But they were like, what does that really show about real estate? So they gave us kind of a small amount of money to go secure our first property. And so we basically spent a month from there trying to convince a landlord like, hey, this is what we're trying to do. We're going to lease your place. We'll pay the monthly lease, but we're going to be bringing in groups of remote workers and digital nomads and folks that aren't tied to a specific geographic location for month plus stays. So it's not like we're, Airbnb-ing out their house on a weekend. It's these folks are coming in for 1 month, 2 months, all the way up to 6 months. And it's the same group all the way through. And that actually took us a while, especially where we were looking. And so the first location, partially done by chance, partially also done because we were looking out in Colorado because we thought it'd be kind of an ideal place to start for what we wanted with the outdoor activities, the developed downtown area, but also, that strong access to nature and the outdoors, which was important to us. And then also we thought would be important to folks during the pandemic. Just ended up falling into place. And so we secured our first property in Boulder in May. It took us about 6 weeks to build out the place because it had hot pink walls and blue curtains. It was clearly owned by someone a little older than ourselves. So we had to redo all of that, furnish the place, and then get our first group in. And so that was really the start, I want to say.
Got it. Yeah. As you thought about that first property, from what I can gather, you guys looked at a couple of different cities, like you were kind of trying to figure out what works best. What was the decision specifically financially led of like, okay, this house is probably the best bang for our buck. We can make our money back. It was, no, this is, the biggest space that we can get. This is, I don't know, the city that we want to be in the most. Like, how did you sort of finally narrow it and be like, okay, this is the one. We think this is the one to really launch with.
Yeah. So we definitely had pretty specific specs of what we wanted. We wanted like a big enough house that could kind of have like a separate co-working space and then as well as like room to hang out or whatever. And then also looking at a location that had access to outdoors, but wasn't like too remote. So, we're looking at like Boulder, Denver, San Diego, those sort of cities. I think the biggest lift was a lot of these landlords. With the pandemic, there's a lot of different co-living companies that were previously leasing from these landlords. And when the pandemic hit, they all kind of skipped out on their leases. So a lot of these landlords are very hesitant to work with any sort of company. So part of it was just, I think at the end we had a couple different landlords that are okay with this concept. And we picked Boulder because one, they were super lenient with what we were able to do in it. And two, it's just great location and access to outdoors.
Yeah. The
other thing I was going to say too is we did also have modeled out from like a financial perspective. We wanted to make sure that we were cash flow positive from the jump, that we were running a profitable business from the jump. So part of that was also looking at, what are these houses going to cost us on a monthly basis? And what does the data say from online tooling that we can get if we were to, refurbish this house a little bit, renovate it, and then rent it out to these groups. And so ultimately, I think when we were looking at those properties that were, available to us and that landlords were okay with this concept, there were only a few of those that kind of hit that box as well. And once we did, we're like, I think Boulder's going to be the best place to start.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys know anything about real estate going into this? Like the more I started to dig in on your business, I'm like, is this a real estate company? Is it a tech company? Is it a hospitality company? It's kind of spans the gamut, but obviously the first step was like securing property. Did you have any sort of experience in the real estate world going into it?
No, zero. Definitely naive, to all of that. I, aside from, you know, fixing some things up in my apartment and, you know, maybe learning some handy skills there, we basically had zero knowledge. So we kind of had to, it was certainly a learning experience, you know, building out all these houses, especially I think the first, you know, we ordered the mattresses to get out there when we arrived, but I don't think the bed frames were coming for like a week. So for like a week, Bobby and I were, you know, sleeping on mattresses on the floor in the house, painting it for 8 hours a day, refurbishing it, you know, making sure that how we were presenting it was going to, you know, attract enough people that it would, you know, still fit into our model from a financial component. So it was a lot of learning on the job. Absolutely.
And did you guys too, like, obviously you buy this first house and it's got pink, you know, pink walls and blue curtains. Like, did you have any advisors in like the interior design world of like, okay, you should be buying this bed, these nightstands, you got to make it look pretty. Like, how did you think about that as two young 20 something guys who don't want to stereotype, but typically would not be, you know, the most like interior design savvy.
Those are exact thought too. Like, I think if you looked at like my bedroom and Danny's bedroom at the time, like we were probably the worst people to go out and design a room. So we got in contact with this woman named Kaylee Allen, who's a lot of background in like photography, interior design, UX design. And she led the whole charge on kind of like, you know, this is what you should buy, this is what you should paint, this is where you should do that. And then we kind of like implemented that. So that was extremely important. We've got a lot of compliments on how she did it. So very grateful there.
Okay. I was going to say, and as you, you know, you set up the house, like what were the next steps to get people in the door? Like, this is an unproven concept. You know, you're kind of just renting this house. It's still the middle of COVID. I'm sure there's some concerns there. Like, what did you do to fill the house on that first wave to really start paying the bills?
So I think it was twofold. The first thing that we did before we brought any groups in was we wanted to actually like beta test the house. And we did it with a friendly audience. So we actually had a couple of our friends from Boston that were, you know, looking to get away from the city for a couple of weeks. So we brought them out there. They were out there for about 2 weeks. We were all living and working from there remotely. We also at the time, we're not really doing this any longer, but we were offering this flexibility early on was, you know, either whole groups could take the entire house or depending on availability, we would offer co-living as well. So if you just wanted to rent like a room or two rooms, you could do that. So we tested out the, you know, the full group concept. That was great. But then it became a question of like, okay, well, let's see how the co-living thing is while we're still out here and, you know, we can control the situation, and manage it. And so we basically just posted in some Facebook groups like, hey, got a couple of rooms for rent. If you're interested, you know, this is what the price is. This is the background of the other folks. Happy to give, you know, references or whatever else. And so we brought in, you know, musicians and artists that were kind of bouncing around the Boulder area or just sort of passing through for a set period of time. We brought them into the house, wanted to see how that dynamic was, and tested that out for 2 weeks. So Bobby and I actually ended up being out in Boulder for about 2 months, the first 4 weeks really setting up the house. And then the next 4 weeks was really, okay, let's see how this thing works. So we did that, which was great. And we got some traction through word of mouth, you know, friends of friends talking about it. And then the other thing that we did is there's this whole ecosystem of communities and platforms online that are actually tailored specifically for remote workers and digital nomads and folks that are looking for flexible housing arrangements. And I'm not necessarily talking about like the Airbnbs and the VRBOs, but these sites like Furnish Finder or Nest Pick for international folks. And so basically what we were doing is just, we brought in a professional real estate photographer, took photos of the property, listed them on all these third-party sites. And we had our own website as well that was available for bookings. And we basically, that would generate enough traffic where we could bring in folks that wanted to stay for a couple of months. And that actually is still working for us right now as well.
Got it. That's cool. And like those first tenants, were they staying? What was their length of stay looking like? Were they a month? Were they 6 months? Were they 3 months? Like, what were they sort of locking in those early days?
Yeah. So the first couple of people we brought in, I'd say almost everyone was a month. We actually have a group of people in there now that are from New Zealand. They're launching like their US operations in America. And they wanted this house. They like love skiing. They go skiing all the time. So they initially booked for a month and they've been there since October, I want to say. So they've been there, you know, close to 4 months now. So we're finding like varying times, but yeah, a lot of people in for a month.
And I saw that you on your website have like minimum requirements now of 30 days. Like, is that something that you plan to keep going forward to extend? Like, what are you thinking about from like a minimum stay standpoint so that you don't just have 1 week drop-ins, weekend drop-ins? Like, how are you planning that out?
I think we're actually going to be more flexible on that. One of the things that it certainly increases the wear and tear on the house. But part of the reason that we chose the month long stay was we didn't necessarily want that rapid turnover and sort of that wear and tear. And also we wanted to avoid the college kids that are renting a house for a weekend and are just going to trash it. Right. And party. That's certainly not the audience we're looking for. But what we found is, you know, there's certainly a large segment of folks that want to work remotely from somewhere. It may not necessarily be a month, but it might be a week or 2 weeks, or even, you know, let's say it's 5 days, something like that. And so part of the reason that we had that 30-day requirement in place was to limit that turnover, but also because the municipalities that we were operating in have very, very strict short-term rental laws, meaning that you cannot, let's say you wanted to post on like an Airbnb or something like that, you have to go get a license from the town. And before you get the license, they have to do an inspection, you have to pay a fee, you have to jump through all these hoops. And, you know, while you're at it, the number of licenses per municipality is capped, and almost all the municipalities, all the licenses are already filled. So it's impossible to get one. But if you have folks staying for 30 contiguous days or longer, that is no longer considered a short-term rental. So we legally could operate within that, you know, without stepping on any toes. So part of it was convenience. What we've actually seen with our newest property in Vermont is because they are looking to sort of boost tourism and bring folks to that area, they're much more lenient about that kind of stuff. So we have the flexibility to do short-term stays, i.e. less than 30 contiguous days, if we want to. And we've actually brought in a couple of groups that are, you know, there for a week or 5 days, or things like that. And that's actually nice for us because it gives us the flexibility to fill those days, let's say between two large groups. So if a group is coming for 3 months and then there's 2 weeks of downtime and another group's coming for 2 months, right? Those 2 weeks in those other two locations, those are basically dead days that we can't, you know, legally utilize. But now that we're, you know, looking at municipalities with more flexible short-term laws, we have the flexibility to say, okay, you can take this for 5 days, a week, 10 days, you know, what have you.
Got it. Okay. And as you mentioned, like now, you know, opening up this new property in Vermont, how are you guys thinking about expanding to new cities, and what are the choices that you're being made? You know, you have Boulder, kind of the OG property. I know you guys launched in Austin like fall of last year. And then now with Vermont, how are you thinking about those choices? And then like, as you continue to look for more spaces?
I think, so one of the things that we've seen is managing properties remotely, and especially across large geographic distances, can be very challenging. You know, frankly speaking, like I'll give you an example. Is I want to say about a month ago, there were severe wildfires, which is crazy because it was like the dead of winter, severe wildfires about 12 miles south of Boulder. So, you know, we're monitoring the situation, but Bobby and I are, you know, both in, I think at the time we were in Boston. So we're monitoring that. We've got a new group that's coming into Austin. And at the same time, we're, you know, trying to close on this Vermont house that we're about to purchase. And so monitoring all those geographies and making sure that that all gets taken care of in disparate areas has definitely proven technically challenging. And so one of the things that we're looking to do, I think going forward, is employing more of a clustering approach of where we get these properties. So one of the things that we've seen, and kind of the reason that we got this Vermont property, is we had a lot of folks that were like, I love the concept of Drifter. I really want to go work remotely from like different geographies, but I don't necessarily want to fly to, you know, and these are folks that are our friends in Boston and New York and what have you. And they're like, I don't want to get on a plane to go somewhere, but I'd love to, like, you know, go escape up to the woods for like a week. You know, maybe I'm like skiing or, you know, I'm hiking during the summer or what have you. And I want to do it for like a week or 2 weeks. And I'd love to be able to get there by, you know, car or train or something like that. And so that sort of influenced our decision to get the first spot in Vermont. And so I think what you're going to see going forward with Drifter is we're probably going to get a lot more locations in, like, you know, let's say like the Catskills or the Poconos, Southern Vermont, more in the New England-esque area, partially because that some of the feedback that we've gotten from our customers and our audience is that they want spots that are closer to home. And then also from our side, technically, it's much easier to manage, you know, from a property management perspective. And then also from, like, let's say a contractor perspective, we can use the same guys if they're in the same geography to make updates and structural modifications to the home.
Mm-hmm. I'm very curious. Is there part of you that's like, you mentioned the group of guys that are in New Zealand, you know, the New Zealanders that are, you know, basically starting their US operations out of the Drifter property. Like, are you, does your mind think of this more as like an office property or a house? I mean, it obviously is both, but like, you know, from the sense of a company coming in and saying, we're going to have our whole team all stay in this facility. Like, how do you think about this as like a purely like an office space concept too?
Yeah, I think we've definitely seen both where, you know, we're kind of like starting with these workers that are in New York or Boston that have the flexibility to work remote. We have like just started reaching out to like companies about kind of doing these like offsites, maybe even, you know, going for a day, working there for the day, kind of, you know, taking the second half of the day off and exploring, or a couple days a week. When we were first, those like one of the targets we were definitely looking at first was working with those companies. Going out and pitching them in winter of 2021 was a little tougher just because everyone in HR was like, you know what, this sounds like a ton of fun. This is just like a PR nightmare that mm-hmm. I'm like send, you know, 10 of my workers out there and like all 10 of them get COVID. So we're hoping to ramp that up pretty soon now that things, you know, fingers crossed, seem to be winding down.
Mm-hmm. And how I always like asking, especially when there's business partners involved, how do the two of you sort of split up responsibilities? And, you know, you mentioned when you got going, you brought in a branding marketing type of person, but how on your day-to-day are you guys splitting up who does what?
It totally depends, right? What I would say is like on the tech stack side of things, I do have the background as the engineer. So anything kind of, let's say tech or website related, that typically falls into my domain, but with the other things, you know, it really depends on what's going on with the day. So like a good example is, you know, I was in transit to Boston the other day. We had like a maintenance, you know, request come in for one of the house, and it's kind of like a jump ball where, you know, Bobby is ready to go, able to get in on that, kind of deal with the tenants, be like, okay, we're going to get someone out there immediately, take a look at this, get it resolved, you know, within the next few hours, basically. So it's kind of, I think more of the business development side of things fall in, under Bobby's purview as well, because he has that background, and same thing with the financial modeling. He has that background as well. So those are probably the domains where we're split up. But as to sort of the day-to-day operations and things like that, it's really like, okay, you know what? I'm working on this. You've got the bandwidth to deal with that. You take it, or vice versa. So I think we're probably exchanging like, you know, thousands of text messages a day, like, okay, you take this, I'll take this, yada, yada, kind of deal with it as it sort of comes in, I would say.
Yeah. Do you guys like, do you set up sort of all right, here's our meetings for the week and here's our things that we got to do. Like, do you have a checklist that you tick off each week?
Yes. Yeah, so we talk every Monday, us two, and then two advisors and investors, and kind of like outline the week and then kind of like look at like, you know, what we're thinking for the next couple months. Yeah, as Danny was saying, it's like so much with this business just comes up day of, like Austin, for example, with the freezes, like the hot water went out in one of the houses. So getting a plumber to like get out there and deal with that immediately. So a lot of it's like unpredictable, but we try to generally plan out like the timeline and where we're going.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Dan.
I was gonna say, we have like our call schedule set up in advance, you know, unless something comes up last minute. But like Bobby was saying, that Monday meeting is a check-in, but we've typically got the entire week, you know, outlined of like, okay, this is what's on my calendar. I can see what's on yours. And then, you know, every Sunday we have a standing, you know, check-in to sort of debrief how that week went. And, you know, sort of what we need to improve upon before we talk to, our mentors, you know, on Monday night, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Are there things that you did not expect when starting this that you've had to deal with or unexpected issues? I mean, the freeze in Austin is a great example, but are there just parts of the job that you're like, man, I didn't see myself doing this when I started a company?
I never want to see another piece of Wayfair furniture in my entire life. I am so sick of setting up like dressers with these like, you know, 50 different parts and these tiny screws. That's definitely like what comes to mind immediately is, you know, for our Vermont place, right? I mean, it's like 7 beds. So setting up like 7 bed frames and screwing all of those together. And, you know, they advise you're not using power tools. So I'm using like screwdrivers and I'm basically just listening to podcasts for like 6 hours while I, you know, while I basically set up those things. So, I am not looking forward to like purchasing my own house and having to buy furniture and set up furniture for that. Cause I know exactly what, you know, what's involved in that.
Bobby, anything for you?
Yeah, the furniture for sure. And then, yeah, I think Boulder, the first one, it was actually covered in like this very, very distinct looking wallpaper. You know, our graphic designer like was like, all right, you got to get rid of that. Same thing though, like getting rid of that. Oh my God. It was just like, we'd kind of like fulfill our other responsibilities of like moving the company forward and like general strategy and like all those other things. And then as soon as like 3 or 4 hit, you know, removing the wallpaper for 3-4 hours at a time. And yeah, same with the furniture. If there's ever a company that, yeah, hopefully someday we can just, you know, pay other people to set up the furniture.
Fair. as you continue to grow and, you know, buy more properties and more money comes in, how have you thought about growing your team? Like, you know, you two are the co-founders and you've obviously, when you're not in Austin, you probably need help to, you know, fix the toilet or to turn over the sheets or whatever it is. But how have you thought about building out the team at large and kind of growing the business in a people capacity?
Definitely. I think there's a couple of key roles that we're likely going to be hiring for hopefully in the first half of 2022. One of them being because it's quite time intensive for us and distracts from, you know, sort of developing strategy and working on the branding and working with operations is actually sourcing these properties. Because, you know, we have a bit of a formula that we go through and we're looking at these different properties in these different locations. And there's, you know, thousands of these different ones. We have to take a look at those, find them first and foremost, preferably off market, most of the time on market. You know, take a look at those, run those through our formula, say, okay, is this potentially going to be viable? If it is viable, set up a tour, go attend the tour, generally virtually in person or virtually first and then in person. And then go through kind of all the diligence on that. So what we're probably going to be looking for is someone with, you know, an experience in evaluating different properties, specifically residential, to come join our team. That's going to be something that'll be a huge lift for Bobby and I because we're spending, you know, hours a day evaluating different properties. And if we can have someone say, hey, here's a list of 10 that, you know, meet your criteria, go nuts. That's going to be perfect. The other thing that we will need as well, secondly, will be someone to really spearhead our operations team and sort of the day-to-day with the houses, right? I mean, right now it's no problem being like, hey, there's, you know, the driveway isn't, you know, plowed or whatever. Can you get the plow guy over here in the next hour? Or, you know, there's something wrong with the water or something like that. You know, handling those right now is not too time consuming, but as we scale this to more properties, that will become more time consuming and will distract from what we want to do to move the business forward. So I think those are going to be our first two hires. And then certainly we'll get someone technical as well to help us build out the actual infrastructure and the tech stack itself.
Mm-hmm. How many properties do you have currently right now? And then what is sort of your vision for this year and 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road for how many you want to have within the Drifter family?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. So right, we have 3, the one in Boulder, one in Austin, one right next to Killington. This year, we're looking to get anywhere between 3 to 6 more, primarily in New England. And then after that, looking to expand more in the East Coast. And then hopefully like after that, if everything's going well and things are humming along, start, you know, expanding west and see how many we can get up to.
Is there a dream destination?
Oh man, it's been on my list forever. It's the opposite side of the country. It's been like our what's the term? Great White Buffalo.
Yeah.
Forever, because like it's so expensive. And, you know, when we were first looking at it, none of the landlords were okay with it, but San Diego's gotta be in there in the mix. I feel like everyone's moving out there. it just looks awesome. I don't think we're going to be there for like, you know, 5 to maybe 10 years, but when we get to San Diego, that's how, and I'll be like, all right, like drifters made it.
We made it. And as you look at like building out, you know, more properties, even just within this year, this is maybe in the weeds question, but like, is the hope that you have, you know, repeat, you're kind of like having repeat customers, that it's like you have the same people coming in over and over and over again, and they're bringing their friends in and they're getting more people involved? Or is the hope that as this remote community becomes more prevalent, that it's like, it doesn't matter who's coming in at this point, like there's enough of a base of remote people that you can get whoever you want in the door?
So our goal actually from the, this is a, I'm glad you brought this up, because I should have mentioned this. Our goal from the outset has really been to keep folks within what we consider the drifter network, as you will. So to your point, and especially with these kind of extended stays and what we're kind of seeing with the pattern of folks that are, you know, kind of embracing the digital nomad lifestyle more, is we want folks to say, you know, I'm going to go spend a month in Boulder, and then I'm going to go spend a month in Austin, and then I want to go spend, you know, maybe they don't want to spend a month in Killington, Vermont, unless it's like, you know, ski season or what have you, but go spend some time there. And maybe not even consecutively, but maybe they're like, hey, month in Boulder, I'm going to do 2 months off back in my home base, month in Austin, you know, a couple months off, whatever, and then Vermont. So the goal is really, you know, it certainly is bringing in new customers, but we don't want these customers just to be, and these guests to be one-offs. We really want folks to stay within the network. And part of that is to, you know, for us to show and to prove to them that, you know, regardless if you had a great experience in Boulder, you're going to have that same great experience in Austin. You're going to have that same great experience in Vermont, in New York, wherever we are. And so that's what we're sort of working towards, to keep those guests in network and keep them coming back to the properties, because they know what they're going to get regardless of which drifter property they're at.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I don't want to take up too much of your time here, but I just have a couple of kind of rapid fire questions here to close you out. The name Drifter, who came up with it? Where did it come from? How many iterations did you go through? Why is it called Drifter?
God, that's going way back. Honestly, I don't know who came up with the name. I'm going to say it was a joint effort, right, Bobby? Unless, you know, you got a better memory than I do.
I know. We were thinking like names to kind of bouncing around. Knew that we couldn't afford like a domain that had like the name perfectly spelled. So knew we were going to have to throw a Y or something in there. I don't remember what exactly happened.
Bobby's joke is always Drifter with a Y, because we couldn't afford the I. I think it was that. And then it was also like the idea of like people sort of drifting, you know, from place to place, and kind of that free spirited digital nomad and remote work concept, I think really made sense for us. So when we were, you know, trying out a couple of different names, I think we had a bunch of different iterations. I think we started with Drift. Turns out there's a huge company that's called Drift currently. Mm-hmm. So we definitely could not get that domain. I think there were a few others. There's actually a competitor to us on the West Coast. I think we were looking at like Wander. They beat us to it. I think they have that domain down. I think they actually have wander.com, which is wild. And so then we ended up, you know, kind of settling on Drifter, and then Drifter Homes was available and Go Drifter was available. And one day we're going to get dryfter.com, you know, and kind of have the full set.
Okay. All right. Biggest fuck up that's ever, you know, that's happened in the history of Drifter. Is there one that stands out as like, wow, that was just really, that did not go the way we wanted it to?
Yeah, Bobby, you want to, or I can talk about this, because this is a disaster. So background of this is, we stayed at every one of our properties because we want to test it out, make sure we knew the ins and out before we rented it out. Biggest fuck up is actually bringing in a group into Boulder. You know, we have like a lockbox. We weren't able to put in a smart lock because the landlord didn't want it, which was annoying. So we had a lockbox out front. Bobby has just been there 3 days ago to check in on the property. So he's just been there. No problem getting in and out. These guys show up. It's 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday morning. Luckily, I was up for some reason. I think I was like watching a movie or something. I get a text from one of the guys being like, hey, this key isn't working. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, East Coast time, which means it's 1 o'clock in the morning, Boulder time. And I'm like, what the fuck do you mean you can't get in? Like, we've had, you know, like six other groups come in. No one's ever complained about not being able to get in. You know, I'm like, all right, well, there's, you know, if you can't get in, there's a spare on the property. Code wasn't working for the spare for some reason. I don't know if they were a little inebriated or what it was, couldn't get the spare. So at like 1:30, 1:45 in the morning, Boulder time, 3:45 East Coast time, I'm like completely exhausted. I have to call a locksmith who's on call in Boulder, because our property manager who's out there wasn't awake, get the locksmith to come over. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to have to, like, you know, drill, or I don't think he ended up drilling and he had to pick the lock. He's, I'm going to pick the lock. And he's like, but before you do this, like, I need you to pay me over the phone. Cause like, I don't think, you know, you're going to do it, whatever. So by the time I get this guy all squared away, it's like 4 a.m. East Coast time, 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, West Coast time. They're pissed. I'm pissed. You know, I think they're, you know, they might've been a little messed up when they got to the property. They think like we messed up with the locks. And so it was a whole fiasco. So from like then on out, we've got like eight different spares on the property. We make sure there's like, you know, eight different ways to get in if they can't, but it was an absolute disaster. And it would have been worse if fortunately, I hadn't been awake. I mean, I think those guys were sleeping in a hotel, if I wasn't awake, cause there's no other way they were getting in.
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. a tough 12-hour flight from New Zealand to like show up to that at 1 a.m. So it was a tough one. I woke up to about 15 missed calls in the morning at like 7 a.m. And luckily, yeah, Danny dealt with all that while I was sound asleep. So yeah, definitely appreciate that.
and the guys, you know, it was ended up being okay. They stayed around and we're all set.
They're still there.
Yeah. They're still there. They've extended. I think they're going to end up being there for like, we'll see. They've expressed interest in extending like another 2 months. So they'll actually end up being our longest group. We, you know, we sent them like a bottle of whiskey as like a makeup gift, you know, just being like, oh, yep, you know, here you go. You know, sorry about that. That's our fault. So, you know, kind of worked hard to get back in those good graces, but that was a hairy situation for OTSEC.
Yeah, that's a little scary. All right, I always like asking people this. You can have anybody you want stay at a drifter property. Who do you want staying as one of your drifters?
Oh, I think I got mine. I'm gonna go with I'm gonna go with Paul Graham. If you're familiar with him, he's like the original founder of Y Combinator. I think he's just like got a great interest, kind of great nose when it comes to like different business or whatever. And so I think it'd be really, really interesting to like have him there, test it out and just like rip us apart and be like, this is what you're doing wrong. You know, this isn't going to work, blah, 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 blah. And it'd be sweet, you know, to kind of have like the guy who started the whole YC ecosystem actually staying at one of our properties. I think that'd be sweet.
All right.
I'm going to go a completely different route and go with Matthew McConaughey. Get him on his Instagram, just talking about Drifter in his nice soothing voice. And I feel like we just have bookings for, you know, forever.
All right. Okay. I like both of those. Very different. How do you guys think about like the marketing piece of it right now? Like, you know, you've definitely been able to kind of get in with these remote communities and things like that. Like, are you feeling like you have to do a ton of marketing and like brand building, or is it more, yeah, I'll leave it at that. Like, how do you feel about the kind of marketing piece?
Yeah, I think we're going to push towards it pretty soon. We actually have found, which has been super interesting, like we have this like demographic of, you know, like these remote workers or seed round companies that want to come in and work there. We've also found some like interesting groups that we weren't expecting to enjoy the properties. Like we've had families who were either, you know, displaced from their homes who need somewhere to stay for like a month, or families who have young kids and want to show them another part of the country before their kids are in school and come in and work there. So we're definitely like starting to like segment who those customers are and gonna start, you know, reaching out and like tailoring things to each specific one.
Mm-hmm. And like, do you have a vision for where like the brand of Drifter is in, you know, 10, 15 years? Like is there, beyond the properties, is there something that you want it to really stand for, or that you want it to represent?
I want it to be, and it's something we certainly need to be better about, but I want us to work towards, you know, having Drifter really be synonymous with remote work. I want folks, when they think of like all the possibilities that they can have with working remotely, to think of like Drifter first, and not necessarily like, you know, I don't know, like an Airbnb or a Furnish Finder or Nestpick or whatever that is. That to me would be, you know, when we've really arrived on that. And I think to date we've been okay with, you know, not throwing a bunch of marketing dollars out, not necessarily developing the brand as much as we should or need to. And part of that is also, you know, we want to make sure that we have enough properties in the system that when we actually start marketing this thing, people can be like, oh yeah, like, okay, there's a property, I don't know, in Vermont or New York or Rhode Island or whatever. It's like, oh great, I see this. I can actually go and book a stay there, versus us being like, hey, we've got one property, it's in Boulder, it's booked for like the next 6 months, you know, like you can't really utilize it. So I think that's been sort of something that we've been working towards and where we've been a little slow with the brand development, but it's going to be a major focus for us in 2022.
Got it. Okay.
It's just like consistent work from home experience. Like I was thinking of it as like the Westin of like these like single family homes where you can like go in and you know, like everything's going to be okay. And you're going to have like all the different amenities that you need to succeed.
All right. So my last question, I end every episode with the sign off of stay weird. So I'm going to ask you both, what makes you weird?
Oh man. I did hear this. I was listening to some of your past episodes, so I knew this one was coming. I have a weird habit. It's going to make me seem like a psycho, which is, when I'm like at home, like about to relax, like, you know, whatever, watching a movie, putting the feet up or whatever, I only take off one sock. It's on my right foot and I leave the left one on. And that freaks people out. They're like, no, it's either they're both on or they're both off. And it seems to like, you know, kind of mess people up. So that probably makes me pretty weird.
Yeah, that's straight pre-crime. Like they should lock you up for that.
Yeah, I've heard that one before, man. So,
all right, okay. And Bobby, what about you?
Oh, I was still thinking on it. There's so many. It's tough to boil it down to one. I don't know. I guess my sole source of income for a month was dressing like Santa and delivering Christmas trees. That was a pretty weird one to explain when seeing all the relatives at the holidays.
That's pretty good one. I mean, how is your, I always like to ask this too. We'll end on this. How do your family's friends like feel about what you're doing with this?
I think in the beginning, and I'm sure this is true with like a lot of entrepreneurs, is like in the beginning, they're like, dude, what are you guys doing? You know, like what is this, you know, especially I think with like remote work where it was like, you know, kind of a brand new concept, like it's not going to last, companies are going back. So I think, you know, you kind of go through the cycle of like a lot of skepticism, and now we're at like three properties. We just bought one and people are like, oh, okay. Like maybe there's something here, and we're not quite at the point where it's like, oh yeah, okay, these guys are right. So I've been fortunate enough to have really supportive family, you know, friends, and a girlfriend too. They've all been very, very supportive, in that endeavor, but there's definitely a good contingent of people, and, you know, all those people included, right, who at the beginning and probably up until a couple months ago, they're like, you guys are out of your minds.
That is a wrap on this week's episode of Destination Different. Thank you, thank you, thank you to Dan and Bobby for coming on this week's show. I love Drifter. If anybody's listened to this show, you've heard that I did a program called Remote Year, traveled around the world, living, working remotely. I like to think I was a little bit ahead of my time, but the world has caught up now, and what these guys are building is the perfect model for the future of work. If I can take out one thing that these guys have accomplished, you know, you try and pull out what are the little nuggets, what are the little lessons. One, I loved, absolutely loved the Santa trees. Just it's the perfect, perfect example of hustling, grinding, finding a little niche market to make some money. There is money to be had. There are businesses to be made everywhere in this world if you're just a little bit creative, if you're just willing to roll up your sleeves. So I loved that. But what they're doing with Drifter, they're learning everything from the ground up. They are hustling. They are finding the right people to ask, the right people to talk to. They are building their network around this idea of remote work. And I love what they're doing. I love what they're creating. I'm so excited. It seems like they have big, big plans for 2022 with more properties, more houses, more space. And the future of Drifter is very, very bright. So thank you to Dan and Bobby for coming on this week's show. Again, we're down to a little more than a week to get your love letters in. If you love the Destination Different podcast, if you've listened to this once, if you've listened to it 100 times, if you get some sort of value or joy out of this show, please, 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 please take 10 seconds, go write 280 characters, the length of a tweet, at the link in the description of the show. Just a quick love letter. It is a huge piece of the criteria to win this contest. I really think Destination Different can win. And all I ask is that you write 280 characters gushing your love for this podcast. It's not that much to ask. So please take a second right now and go do that. I'm going on vacation next week, but we will still have an episode of Destination Different. Don't you worry. So we'll be back again next week, next Thursday, with another episode of Destination Different. Until then, stay weird.
I had a dream. You gave me superpowers. We fell in love for just a couple hours. I can't tell the difference between what's fake and what's been missing. Often I'm misunderstood, so I'm looking for a better me. This is your love song, baby. I hope that you know the words. This is your love song, baby. I hope that you know what you were. Oh, 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 oh. We should.